If you want pure, unfiltered, unadulterated sports, you've come to the right place. AM 950 and 95.7 FM, the sports leader, ESPN Rochester.
Plenty of thoughts from yesterday's loss at Newark Field against the New York Jets. Joining us now in the Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia, Rochester sports icon, 13 Wham sports director, Mike Catalano. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Good, fellas. What's happening?
Mike, I would contend, and even though this season's, of course, long gone, but
right.
These are the worst type of losses where you can debate what was the primary reason. Was it the special teams? Was it the defense coming up with the was it the offense not being able to run the football? I mean, there's plenty of blame to go around, which means, gosh, there's plenty of things you got to fix before next year.
Yeah, I think we kind of knew that, didn't we? I mean, I'm looking at this team saying I'm a little disappointed in the defense down the stretch in the last couple of games. Now, look, the week before, a terrible call against Milano that set up the touchdown where the Dolphins took the lead, but they didn't keep him out of the end zone. And then in this game, Darnold woke up and made some really nice throws in the fourth quarter and got him down there. And it's a shame Milano got hurt. And if you look at the last play, I mean, it would be nice to have Milano on the field for the last play. They just couldn't get to him in the backfield. Special teams are a disaster. I mean, they've had so many players on the field, so many guys now that are playing regular snaps as opposed to just being on special teams. As somebody said yesterday, you know, nobody cares about special teams until you care about them, until something actually happens. And it really hurt them yesterday. So I still am in a mindset of there are core guys that are going to be around. There are still a ton of changes. And I think there's going to be some changes on the coaching staff, too. So, still some positives out of the game, but I think that was a disappointing loss.
And Mike, when we talk about sacrificial lambs when the season is over and you finish sub 500, usually there are those personnel and coaching staff changes. I mean, you know, we start with special teams, but do you think it goes deeper than just releasing your special teams coordinator?
Well, yeah, because I think they need to do a little bit more quarterback-wise. And look, I think Daboll calls a pretty good game, especially with what he's dealt with this year in terms of changing quarterbacks and rookies coming in and just having Kelvin Benjamin on the roster. And, you know, and now you're trying to get Josh Allen going. And I still think he calls a really good game. But in terms of another set of eyes, more help, everything devoted, you cannot put enough resources into Josh Allen to make him better. And it is amazing to me when I talk to fans who want to make big long-term judgments on Allen so quickly. Even last week when things were good, or the Jacksonville game when he made plays, and then this week, it's like, he can't see down the field. He can't do progressions and all this. I'm thinking, the guy still has started. How many starts now for him? What is that? Eight? What is it? Total number of starts in his career?
Right.
So he needs work, and they all make mistakes. And I've seen flashes that are good, but he's going to need to progress into year two. So, yes, Danny Crossman, God bless him. He's been, think about a guy who can work for Marone, work for Rex, and then still get hired by Sean McDermott. Three guys that are nothing alike, the three of them, and they all have Danny Crossman. So I think maybe that time in Buffalo has run out, but I don't think he's the only one. I mean, I don't know what the feeling is towards Juan Castillo as the offensive line coach. He and McDermott have a really long history. I mean, the fact that Castillo replaced McDermott as Eagles defensive coordinator, Andy Reid, and you know, they've worked together for a long time, and he's considered a very good one, but the offensive line stinks. I mean, it's really been a poor line. And then you look in terms of like you said, special teams and maybe adding to the quarterback staff. So I think there's going to be a lot of that stuff going on in the offseason.
How does it work with the structure of the front office to McDermott here, Mike? Because if there's going to be changes, and I think we could say Crossman is on thin ice to say the least, and you bring up Castillo, is that solely the decision of Sean McDermott, or is this kind of the group decision? Because I go back to the days of, you know, the Pegulas and Rex Ryan and Greg Roman, supposedly it was Rex Ryan's decision. Come on, that was the Pegulas and, you know, coming down from above. So do you think that this current structure, you could see Brandon Bean making suggestions to Sean McDermott about his coaching staff?
I think Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott talk all the time. I don't think this is two sides who don't speak very often. All of a sudden Bean comes down with an ultimatum to his coach. I think they are in lockstep in a lot of things. I think when they, it's like when they make draft picks, you know, in terms of the way Bean handles it, they kind of know where they're going, and then that final decision is made in the draft. It isn't like out of the blue, you know, they do something strange. I think they talk all the time. But if I'm running a team, boy, my coach has to have major, if not 100% say on his coaching staff, unless there is some sort of problem. Let's just say, for example, looking at Castillo, and I'm not advocating for Juan Castillo to go look at what he's working with. But I'm saying is if that was an issue, though, maybe the closeness between the coaches, they've worked together for so long, if it takes another set of eyes or ears and a discussion and possible changes, sure, that can happen. But I think their roles are pretty well defined. I think Brandon Bean is the guy handling the roster, with certainly with input from McDermott. But you got to let McDermott coach, and you got to let him pick his coaching staff.
Mike, are we satisfied with the job that they've done here in year two? I look at some hits, but I also see some misses. They've got their quarterback. They're going to hitch their wagon to Josh Allen, but you also got rid of Kelvin Benjamin, and you invested in him with a third and a seventh, which may not turn out to be anything. But now I look at LeSean McCoy, and I think, wow, earlier this year at the trade deadline, you maybe didn't get what you want to get for LeSean McCoy, but you could have got something for LeSean McCoy, and now we've got a hamstring issue that we're going to be hearing about for the rest of the season. I mean, are these guys kind of making it up as they go along, or do you think they have a real legitimate plan as far as what they want to do with some of this personnel, and they're just going to kind of keep going to the plate and hope that they can connect, you know, and if they swing, they miss, they get back up and try it again?
Yeah, I think they had a plan. I think, as we've talked about before, I don't like the way they handled the quarterback situation. But as it's evolved and Josh is playing now, and at least, you know, from what we've seen, there's a competent veteran backup behind him. It's the setting that should have been in place before, and it was not. Okay, but we've gotten to this point, and we're going to see Josh for this last, what, six games, hopefully, and letting him play. They've done a pretty good job sort of unearthing some potential guys at wide receiver, but they had done a poor job in the offseason. The Benjamin thing is a miss. It's a big miss, mostly because they went and got a guy that they knew of, and he was even worse than what you would have feared because he just did not seem to be a good fit. Now, nothing that McDermott and Bean talk about did Benjamin fit in that case. But I think they have a plan. Look, you know, it's funny. I think about that with McCoy. And I think how they've had basically no running game the last few weeks other than Allen. And I think to myself, what if they would have dealt McCoy? We'd be maybe sitting here going, gosh, if they still had McCoy, they'd have a more potent running game, you know, because they would have dealt him and gotten, you know, there's a great deal of a fifth round pick. You lost these two games because you couldn't run the ball. Well, they had him on the field last week and they didn't run the ball. And this week he got knocked out early. And I don't see him fitting particularly well. So to your point, if they could have gotten what they wanted out of them, something they wanted, they probably should have made the move. But I still think that's a relatively minor thing. I think in the offseason, I think McCoy's going to move on and they're going to go in a new direction at running back.
Mike Catalano, 13 Wham, and of course you need guys up front to block. I've been so disappointed by Ryan Groy, at least from, you know, what we saw at the end of 2016 to what isn't there now, and I can't say for certain, and you tell me if you agree or disagree. I'm not seeing enough out of Wyatt Teller to say he's the guy, but again, he's still young. Mike,
yeah.
I would make a case that you could see four new starters on this offensive line next season.
You could. I mean, the guys like Teller, look, these rookies, they're getting out there. Again, it also is much easier to play offensive line when you're on a good offensive line, if that makes sense. I mean, they don't have a dominant player on that line at all. They don't have who's the most accomplished guy on the line? Is it Deion Dawkins? I mean, they don't really have that guy. And Teller, look at how guys can progress year one to year two. I like the fact that he's on the field. I think he's going to be playing next year. I think Dawkins is going to be playing next year. I think they're going to go out, draft at least two linemen, and I think they're going to sign a veteran. I think they're going to be pretty aggressive on the O-line. But that part of it, I look at that and go, I just, you know, everybody's talking about what, you know, Allen jumps out of the pocket and he moves and all. I don't want to see bad habits out of him. Maybe he'll start picking up some of those and he'll continue. But obviously, no, it doesn't go anywhere until the line is better. And I think that's going to be a huge area of a need. Now, it's funny you mentioned Groy in that way. Still, they made a decision on Groy when they were firmly in place with Eric Wood. Because I remember when they matched the offer sheet. I think it was the Rams that made the offer
Correct.
Sheet to Groy.
Yeah.
And then they matched it. And my first thought was, wow, maybe they want to move on from Eric Wood, right? Because, and then it was only a couple months later, I was doing a preseason game. And it, I remember the day it was because it was the day Marcell Dareus got sent home for showing up
Baltimore.
Late and driving to the game in Baltimore. And that night, they also announced that Eric Wood had signed an extension. I'm like, okay, so what's Ryan Groy's spot? Then I kept thinking he's going to go to guard. And he's been, you know, some guys are versatile because they can play positions well. And some guys are versatile because they don't play their positions very well. And I think that's what seems like the way it is with Groy. So that's a swing and a miss, too.
Mike, what happened to the Bills' pass rush? It was non-existent yesterday.
Yeah, you know, again, I think that that rush at times looks dominant, right? When they get going, like, say, in the Minnesota game or even in the first Jets game, and when they get to the quarterback, you're like, wow. When Jerry Hughes is going and going well, he makes plays. You're getting the push from Kyle Williams. Lorenzo and his limited number of staffs gets there. It wasn't there yesterday. And when it was there, like late in the game, when they got towards Darnold, Kyle Williams got close on him. Darnold made a heck of a play and beat their rush. So, yes, not the best day for a pass rush. And that's why I still believe that they're going to pick a pass rusher or go after a free agent really high in the offseason. I know everybody wants offense, but you better have a pass rusher at some point. It's about the only line of defense you've got. You got a corner, though Trey White had a bad day yesterday. You better have some more pass rush, and I think that's what they're going to be looking at high in the draft.
Mike Catalana, 13 Wham, joining us. You know, Mike, if they do go defense number, you know, they're picking top 10, right?
Right.
I mean, people are going to, you know, that's going to not be a popular thing. So, I mean, but
yeah, you look, it'll be unpopular with people who don't pay attention to the draft and don't look at value, because when you look at this draft and go down again, doesn't mean everybody is right. But it's going to be a draft dominated by defensive players, though it does seem to be pretty strong in offensive line, too. So I have no problem with them going either way. Hey, here's the plus, guys. They got a lot of needs, still a lot of needs. But they don't believe they have a need at quarterback, which is so big in those terms, because you could be trading back. You could be adding picks. You could be picking best player available, unlike what they did last year when they went up and got a quarterback. So, yeah, I mean, yes, they need O-line. They need wide receivers. But where are they picking now? I hadn't looked at it this morning. I'm going to guess somewhere around 10.
I want to say they're eight or nine, yeah, somewhere around there. Yeah.
Okay. That's high to pick a wide receiver, I would say, depending on who it is. But, boy, you probably can find a pass rusher there. And you know it's still that way. But they're going to use assets to go get other guys. And there's going to be some players available, too, that, you know, maybe people aren't unaware, are not aware. Hey.
Oh, it gets it. Sorry to interrupt.
Kelvin Benjamin's going to be a free agent.
Oh, maybe. Here's the draft order up to date. San Francisco 1, Arizona, Oakland, Atlanta. Atlanta.
Wow.
The Jets at 5, and then at 6. The Buffalo Bills at 4-9. The Bills only ahead of Jacksonville because they actually defeated Jacksonville. So,
well, Mike, you brought up a word that always perks up my ears when I hear, and that's value. And we're talking about that in terms of draft capital. But I also think it's an important conversation to have when you're talking about who you already have on the roster. I mean, we kind of already have made up our minds on what Charles Clay needs to be doing next year. It's not playing for the Buffalo Bills. But what about some of the other bigger contracts? What about the contracts of a LeSean McCoy, a Jerry Hughes? I mean, do you really think that Brandon Bean is going to sit down at the end of the year and say, oh, yeah, we absolutely feel like we're getting value and we're getting our money's worth for these contracts and the production that we need out of what you guys are making?
That's a good point, because there's value, and then there's on the field value, and then what it costs you to move on from the guy. And all those guys are interesting in a certain way, because when you look at, you know, I hear these phrases, like somebody says, you get rid of Charles Clay, you save $4.5 million in cap space, which you do, but you are also now eliminating a player on the 53, paying, I think it's $4 million to get rid of them. So you have to think in those terms, too. You're going to now replace that player. You need to upgrade that. And then you look at LeSean McCoy. I think his contract next year pays 9 point some million, whatever the number is. You can go much cheaper than that at running back, and they really didn't get production from those guys. I'm not sure what they think. Not really sure what they think about Jerry Hughes in that role. I think he shows these flashes, but if they can move on from the number, depending on where they draft, it might be a guy they move on from. The one thing they do have next year is cap space, and cap space is good to spend. It's also good to use to move on from other contracts, which they had a difficult time doing this year, right? It would have been tough to move on from Charles Clay this year with all the dead cap space it would have been. Next year, there's a lot of room there. And honestly, I'd say of those three guys, bigger money, veteran guys, I would say three guys that Doug Whaley was involved in bringing in, I would say that I'd say two of the three are probably gone, and there's a chance that all three of them are gone.
Mm-hmm. 13 Wham's Mike Catalano, what are you guys working on tonight?
Well, I'm working on the National Football Foundation dinner tonight. So I am out at Channel 13 today. Toby is there. Toby's handling things today. And obviously we're going to be looking to get I'm guessing it's the formal word on Matt Milano. I would be stunned. Hopefully it is an injury that, while it obviously looked really serious, that it is something he can come back from pretty quickly in terms of for next year. McCoy, I know they're saying day-to-day. That's going to be a really interesting one for the last few weeks. And Hauschka taking that shot, he was not right the rest of the game. He was limping around. So he's had a rough few weeks. They keep changing holders on him. It hasn't worked out too well. He's missed a few key kicks when he normally doesn't miss. And, I wonder if they think they should have just because they haven't gotten great punting. They only punted one yesterday, but it's not like there's been a major upgrade in the punting. And maybe a Colton Schmidt staying around wouldn't have been the worst idea. Sure. So, those type of things for today. And, talk a little college basketball. Syracuse back sort of ranked, right? I guess if you're tied for 25th, you're sort of ranked.
You're ranked, yeah.
But how about those UB Bulls, huh?
Yeah.
Undefeated, 9-0, taking care of Bonnie. And they get a game coming up against the Cuse, I think. So.
And what did Nate Oates tweet out yesterday? Be careful what you wish for, because I think the Bonnies fans may have been yelling, "We want UB." Well, I got UB.
You got it.
So, yeah, like a little snark in a coach every once in a while. Boeheim saves it for the podium, and Nate Oates sends it out in his tweet. By the way, I just looked on TV. I think the refs just made another bad call in the Eagles-Cowboys game.
Oh, shocking. Yeah. No, I mean,
they lost. Dallas deserved that. Dallas is better than them right now. The Eagles are a shell of what they were. And, they had the ball for, I think, 90, some crazy amount of plays yesterday. And it was still tied. And Dak Prescott is the only quarterback in the league who can throw for 450 yards and still keep the Eagles in the game with some of his mistakes, which he did. But, those calls for the fumble to start and the pass interference on Dallas Goedert were probably two of the worst calls I've ever seen.
It's an epidemic, Mike. I mean, you watch any NFL game and the officials are just so off. I mean, whether it's a missed offsides calls leading, on national TV on the Sunday night game last week.
The Sunday night game.
Right. It's terrible. Just terrible, terrible. I mean, people have lost their jobs for less.
When they miss a call that is a high speed, helmet to helmet, they didn't see it, it's 50 yards downfield, the ref is running it. I get those. You see it on the slow-mo and you're like, oh, there it is. But when they miss calls, when that is the ref's specific job, like there was a ref, line judge, he's looking at the line.
Yes.
And that player for the Chargers, now a week ago Sunday, stood up so much before the play, the Steelers guy's like pointing, like, are you kidding me? And they score a touchdown on the play. Yeah, you had one job. It's funny to me, the NFL product, no matter how stupid the league is and no matter how many mistakes Goodell makes, people watch and watch because they love the product, but it's like they're trying to hurt their own product. You watch the game, and right away you're looking for the, at the bottom of the screen for the graphic that says flag, because there's so many flags. And I'm not talking about safety flags. I'm talking about flags, where you could just let the play go. Let them play a little bit. Yeah. And the last few weeks have been absurd. Yeah. And by the way, your Bears, no one wants to play the Bears.
Well, listen, they looked good. Defense looked good last night.
What they don't want to play.
Well, yes, and I don't know that what they do offensively is going to be enough in the postseason against a team like New Orleans. They did what they did against the Rams, and I'm very pleased with that outcome. But, and we all know this, the postseason's a different animal, Mike.
Home field means a lot, too. That's the problem.
It does.
Yeah, I mean, if the Bears have to go to New Orleans, do I feel good about the Bears? No way. No way. I mean, the last time those two teams met, it was on the way to the Bears making it to the Super Bowl. New Orleans had to come to Chicago. It was a different ballgame. God, I still think New Orleans, even though they looked rough last week, I still think they're the NFC's pick to go to the Super Bowl.
They looked rough, and they struggled with Tampa
yesterday.
So I don't know what's going on, and somehow they still found themselves back into the number one spot. So it's strange. I thought the end of the wild card for both leagues is going to be a pretty mediocre team if you look at it, and it did not seem that way. The last wild card team right now, I mean, like, is it going to be Minnesota? Is it going to be? Well, I think Seattle would be one of them. I mean, there are teams still hanging in there to make it. And in the AFC, the Dolphins are still alive.
Yeah,
and the Steelers are falling apart. Like, so if you get that third seed in either conference, you might be getting a relatively easy first game in the playoffs, which is important to finish third and not fourth in both conferences.
Well, it's going to be a fun 3 weeks down the stretch here as we get ready for the postseason in the NFL. And Mike, we always appreciate you taking time out of your day to join us here in the Sports Bar. It's great catching up with you, as always.
All right, fellas. Good talking with you.
You got it. Mike Catalano, 13-WHAM Sports Director, joining us in the Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia.
Yeah, we didn't even get the Mets-Phillies talk.
That's okay. Oh,
busy
I know.
Day.
I know.
Hot
stove stuff going on. All right. Yeah. So here we are. We got Sean McDermott's press conference coming up here shortly after 4 o'clock in the Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. Let's do this, Gino. Let's take a break here.
Because we're late again. Always.
Honestly, when we get guys like Catalano,
I know.
I could spend multiple hours just chewing the fat talking about football with guys like that. And I love doing it so much that, we run a little bit long sometimes and it puts us in a little bit of a corner. But we got Sean McDermott coming up. We don't want you to miss that because there's plenty of information to glean from what he has to say at One Bills Drive this afternoon. He's scheduled to speak to the media here shortly after 4 o'clock. We want to make sure we get you to that in time. So we'll take a break here, come back. Sean McDermott next, and also we'll throw in some Aldrich to that as well.
Yeah, lot to get to. Ryan Talbot on why the Buffalo Bills should go get A.J. Green.
All right, all on the way. AM 950 and 95.7 FM. ESPN Rochester.
It's time to light up the holiday season. Pack the kids and head to the Dome Arena on Hawkins Road in Henrietta. Sing along to the holiday hits as you drive through the brand new Rochester Festival of Lights and North Pole Village to benefit the Salvation Army. When the sun goes down, the lights come on. Wind your way through over a mile of bright, dazzling lights and festive holiday-themed displays. It's a great way to make new family memories together. And there's more. This is an outdoor, indoor experience. Park the car and head into the dome for the special indoor light show and take a stroll through the North Pole Village where the kids can meet Santa. Take scenic family holiday photos, decorate stockings and cookies, jump around the bounce houses, and more. Open every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night in December. The Rochester Festival of Lights and North Pole Village is sponsored by Victor Chevrolet, located in the heart of Victor, find new roads, and by MVP Healthcare. More convenient, more supportive, more personal. Don't pay full price at the gate. Get advanced discount tickets now at GetMyPerks.com or Wegmans. Find details on Facebook or at RochesterFestivalOfLights.com.